Hi, kids. Welcome to Bronco Land. We got some smart ones in the room.
This is the DenverBroncos.com podcast with you, as always, Ben, myself, Mace, and...
How are you, Ben?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. It's been a good week, and that's why we have gelato in front of us.
Well, you've got gelato. I've got sorbet, but either way, it's... You know,
a good way to cap the week.
Good way to cap the week. Big week here at Dove Valley. A little bit of a celebratory bite of mango sorbet for me.
I've got the cappuccino gelato.
Yeah,
I can't get away from
our
coffee.
And then Phil Milani didn't. He got cappuccino too. No, he got espresso.
We ordered the same thing. They didn't have espresso.
Okay. Yeah.
But yes, it was an exciting week here for us, and one where we did a lot of great stories, a lot of great videos and photo galleries. Because we had a really great thing to cover. A little bit of relief mixed with celebration in that a five-year contract for Demaryius Thomas agreed upon right before the deadline for the franchise tag. And he'll be back for training camp. And, I mean, what more can you say? It's just great to see him and the Broncos come to terms there and sign that deal.
Yeah, five-year contract, basically... First two full guaranteed, and then there's some guarantees in the third year of the contract, and it's potentially worth $70 million to Demaryius Thomas, and makes him and Dez Bryant, they'll be the second highest paid receivers in the league, right behind Calvin Johnson, and really, I mean, Thomas earned the deal. I mean, it was it wasn't a question of. Of whether he deserved a big contract. It was just how big it was going to be, and certainly the rumblings that guys like Bryant and Johnson and Thomas wanting Calvin Johnson money were floating out there throughout the offseason, but Calvin Johnson's contract was from a different time and a different environment. So the deals that both Dez and Demaryius got, I think, were pretty reasonable, and for the Broncos, it's one less thing to worry about. I think it also really helps in the locker room as well because, the Broncos have had to let go of some guys this off season. Let's go back to Julius Thomas and Orlando Franklin leaving, and then Terrence Knighton as well and Raheem Moore. The salary cap pretty much dictated all of those because you couldn't keep everybody, and you committed It was going to be a $12.82 million on. Demaryius' franchise tag, and that counted against the cap had he signed it, and now he's going to play under his new contract. He had Von Miller with a fifth-year option as well. It's not that the Broncos weren't spending money, but they couldn't spend it on every guy that they wanted to keep, but I think it was important for morale that a guy who's a legitimate superstar, legitimately among the top two, top three receivers in this league, it was important, I think, not just for the team, but I think for the locker room to see a guy like Demaryius Thomas get rewarded, I think that's going to go a long way. That's worth more than just money.
It's also a guy who's shown a lot of fortitude, and not only on the field but off the field. It's been a big 48 hours for him. His mother had her sentence commuted by President Obama, and she'll be released, I think, November 10th.
So presumably she'll get to see him play for – the first time potentially in person. I mean, I was just thinking back over his childhood growing up, what he's endured. I think the number of Broncos all time that have been through more than he's been through to get to this point, you can probably count on one hand. I mean, it's amazing what he's survived to get here. And I think that's part of what makes him who he is as a person and also as a player. I think he's got there's a drive and there's a persistence there that is unusual. You look at the last 3.5 years, he hasn't missed a game since he had all those injuries earlier in his career. He's played through plant pain, he's played through some nagging issues, and he's pressed on and he's been incredibly productive. You want guys like Demaryius Thomas on your team. And now I think what's interesting, you look at where he's come from and where he's going. You know, if he ends up playing the balance of his career in Denver, you know, he's going to become one of the most honored and hallowed players in team history. And to come from a childhood that was so hard to get to that point where he appears to be headed, what a tremendous story.
Exactly. And in his first year as a captain, too. Important to note that he's not only come a long way as a player, but he's also making himself into a leader on the offense.
And certainly, when you look ahead, he's got the 5-year deal coming up. Peyton Manning, you know, you don't know how many more years he's going to be the quarterback. When Manning is done, you know, it could be Brock Osweiler, it could be somebody else that we don't know, but you're going to need veteran leaders in that locker room. You see Thomas established himself on the defensive side. We see guys like Chris Harris Jr. who are establishing themselves as leaders. It almost feels like you're seeing kind of a generational shift in leadership right now as the Broncos continue to evolve, and that guys like Demaryius Thomas and Chris Harris Jr. And then David Bruton, if they can keep him around, he's on the last year of his current contract. Those are the guys that are going to, you know, kind of point the way for the Broncos for the next few years down the line. And it's good. It's part of the evolution of any team. It's good to see. But it's an actual part of the process.
I mean, it's kind of like, well, with Chris Harris especially, because he took so many cues from him. But like Champ Bailey, I mean, there's so many parallels between him and Chris Harris. So
right. And even though Demaryius Thomas, he didn't play with a guy like Rod Smith, but you know, sometimes you'll see Rod around the building. He'll talk to the receivers. And something I was talking with you about a couple hours ago off mic, you go back to 2011, and it was right before Demaryius Thomas emerged as an elite receiver. That 7-game run, 5 in the regular season, 2 in the postseason, when Tim Tebow was the quarterback. You know, Rod Smith came into the building the week before the Minnesota game and, basically gave the receivers some counsel about, you know, making the most of your opportunities, because, you know, the Broncos weren't passing the ball often, and when they were, it wasn't particularly effective. None of the pass-catching targets seemed happy about the state of things on offense. And, you know, Demaryius Thomas really took Rod Smith's advice to heart, and, the next game they go up to Minnesota, he has 4 catches for a 144. Broncos come back to win 35-32. And that really was the start of Demaryius Thomas becoming who he is. And that leads me to my other point, which is that he's not a product of playing with a future Hall of Fame quarterback in Peyton Manning. He can be elite in his own right, no matter who the quarterback is. And we saw that late in the 2011 season when he helped, you know, carry the Broncos, you know, to a postseason bid and then to their first playoff win.
Starting with that
in
game,
6 years, yeah.
It was actually a franchise record for receiving yards. And the last 7 games of that season, including the postseason, he set the franchise record there. Though with 204 yards against the Steelers, that takes a big chunk of it right there.
And everyone remembers 80 of them in particular. Yes. On the first play of sudden death overtime in that wild card game.
That is one heck of a lasting memory that, I mean, it's going to be, like you were saying earlier, it's going to be hard for him to top a play more electric, more memorable, mm-hmm. and more defining.
Yeah. And we've seen him make some big plays over the years, but the only way he's topping that is an individual play. It's if he's making that kind of catch to win a Super Bowl, which certainly is an outcome I think the Broncos are hoping for in the near future, hopefully this year.
I wanted to stick with Demaryius here for a second, but kind of shift towards what they're going to do in the next month. Sorry, my mic's cutting in and out. But what they're going to do when training camp starts and DT really starts getting incorporated into the offense after missing OTAs and mini camp. I mean, he's a smart enough guy, and he and Peyton have more chemistry than anyone on the roster.
And he's had the playbook. So he's been able to study what's going on, and some of his teammates and receivers coach Tyke Tolbert have been in pretty regular contact with him. So it's not the same as doing it in practice, but
some kind of baseline.
He's gotten a baseline. He's been able to get some. I mean, what it's really would be mental reps because you're not even watching. You're having to kind of visualize the whole thing, but.
Desensitory reps.
Yeah. But the other thing they'll want to know is what kind of shape he's in. Now, I have no doubt that Demaryius Thomas has been working out diligently, so I think he's going to be in good shape. But even then, I think they're going to be a little bit cautious with him, make sure he's completely up to speed. You don't want to have him pulling a hamstring in training camp and having that nag him for the rest of the season. So I think they're going to be very cautious with him early just to make sure they know where he is, and they don't put him at the risk of an unnecessary injury, and then I think he'd be ready to go. I think by the time week one against Baltimore arrives, as long as he's healthy, I think he's going to be his usual self.
Now that's what Elway was alluding to in the call the other day, was getting him ready in training camp, making sure he doesn't pull anything, something like that. I was going over some of the quotes from OTAs from Coach Kubiak, who had talked about the wide receivers being probably the most difficult transition as far as the offense moving over to zone blocking and more of like a run-pass mix. And he was talking about the terminology being difficult. So that might be the most difficult thing, I guess, for Demaryius to learn. Not so much the plays or...
But we know he can be a good blocker on the outside in the pass in the running
size.
Game. He's got the size, and going back to when he was at Georgia Tech and the Yellow Jackets had the triple option that that Paul Johnson likes to run down there.
Mm-hmm.
And, he was an outstanding blocker and he was very physical. So that's something I have no doubt is going to kick back in, especially. And I think he's going to do well at. And the thing with Demaryius Thomas, and part of the reason why you're re-signing him, he's going to be successful no matter who the quarterback is, and he's scheme independent. You can put him in any offense, and he's going to make plays.
Mm-hmm.
You look back at the 2010 draft, the Broncos drafted him and Eric Decker. And when they were making their long-term plans relative to the salary cap, it became clear over the course of the 2013 season that the priority was going to be keeping Demaryius Thomas for the long haul over Eric Decker. If they were going to spend their money on one of those two receivers, it was going to be on Thomas rather than Decker. No offense to Eric Decker, who had a couple of very good seasons for this team, but Demaryius Thomas is a more unique talent than Eric Decker. You can find other guys that are comparable to Eric Decker, and certainly look at what Emmanuel Sanders did. After being a number three receiver in Pittsburgh, he comes in here and he breaks out last year. Demaryius Thomas, guys like that, those are exceptionally hard to find. And given the continued increasing emphasis on the passing game, finding one of those guys often means you've got to pick in the top 10. You're mm-hmm. looking at the guy, you're looking at the guys in recent years like Sammy Watkins. Going to Buffalo, for instance, and other receivers that we've seen in the top ten picks. I think Demaryius Thomas, if he came out today, would be a top 10 pick. So that kind of guy, you're not going to find him otherwise. So you better hang on to him and the Broncos did. And
also, how exceptional is that? Like, or maybe not exceptional. How important is that for them to hang on to the guy they've, kind of helped mature and really made into, like, this star player as far as, John Elway always talks about developing all pros, not necessarily drafting them. And being able to retain a guy that's spent his entire career here to this point feels like it has some weight to it.
Well, every guy in that locker room wants to see that if they do well, that they're going to be taken care of. And sometimes that's tough. You can't keep every guy that you would like to keep. And I think that's been apparent this offseason. I think in an ideal world in another era, they would have hung on to Orlando Franklin. They would have hung on to Julius Thomas, but you had to make tough choices this year, because if you kept Julius Thomas, that meant that that was going to chew into the cap space that eventually went to Demaryius Thomas, for instance. It's the downside of working under the salary cap. You know, the NFL has the best competitive balance of all the four major sports leagues, but it has the best competitive balance because it really hamstrings teams that, you know, if they develop a lot of good players, they're not going to be able to keep them all on their second contracts. You remember last year there was talk about multiple contract negotiations going on, and the one they got done with was Chris Harris Jr. You know, and basically it was almost like a race to a contract, but it really was, because you know you had a lot of guys that you wanted to keep, but you know, of those guys, if the one you got secured was the one you were going to go with, and that's Chris Harris Jr. Now, that and again, you get to next year, Broncos are going to have some more tough choices. You know, Von Miller's contract is expiring. Malik Jackson, Derek Wolfe, Dan Trevathan. If Geno Gradkowski does well at center this year, he's got an expiring contract. I believe it's 22 players on the Broncos are due to hit unrestricted free agency next year, including the entire draft class of 2012. So, if you develop players, you're going to have to make those tough decisions. But you want to keep as many of them as possible, and in particular, you want to keep the guys that are irreplaceable. You know, Demaryius Thomas, I think he's irreplaceable in terms of his skill set. I think Chris Harris Jr. is a guy who's irreplaceable in terms of what he brings on the field and how he can play outside and inside with equal effectiveness, and how even though he may not have the measurables in terms of height, weight, speed, you know, he's got the technique, he's got the savvy, and he's got the intelligence to do a lot of different things. You know, and again, those are guys you develop, those are guys you want to keep, and we'll see how many of those young guys the Broncos can keep next offseason. But clearly, I think going forward, that's your first priority. If you have to import guys in free agency, great. But in general, you want to give more of those big contracts to the guys you develop. Teams like Baltimore, Pittsburgh, Green Bay, the ones that went over the long haul, that's what they do. That's where the Broncos are trying to get.
One question I did have is that with him coming in, missing minicamp and OTAs, do you think he'll get more time in the preseason, maybe getting some more reps while he can?
Once he gets up to speed physically, and once they know that he's in shape and he's got the offense down, I think you'll see him maybe get a few more reps. And there's two benefits to that. Number one, for him, gets him up to speed. Number two, when you're looking at the long haul, he just signed a deal that could cover him for the next 5 years. So don't you want him to get some snaps at Brock Osweiler? If you're trying to develop Brock Osweiler as the quarterback of the future, if you still like him as a potential successor to Peyton Manning, don't you want to give Osweiler some work with Demaryius Thomas, knowing that if Thomas plays out this contract, in your ideal world, Brock Osweiler is going to throw him a lot of passes in that span? That's something I think that could benefit both of them if they decide to do that. Of course, I'm an advocate of giving Brock Osweiler, say, the first preseason game against Seattle, giving him first and second team reps, but you know, we'll see what happens there. Just because I advocate for something doesn't mean it happens.
And it wasn't just Demaryius who got his franchise tag contract, but it was also, well, and not even Dez Bryant. We kind of touched on Dez Bryant a little bit.
Stephen Gostkowski.
I was wondering about your thoughts on his landmark deal.
$4 million a year is way too much for a kicker. But I think the one we really want to talk about, of course, is Justin Houston. That's going to impact the Broncos on multiple levels. Number one,
they have to
keep going against him twice a year, and Tyson Brailo at left tackle settling in. Your first challenge is Elvis Dumervil. Your second challenge is Justin Houston. Arrowhead Stadium in week two. Baptism by fire. But the other interesting thing about Justin Houston is, of course, 6 years, $101 million potentially on his deal. And whether that contract is going to be a template for what the Broncos try to do next year with Von Miller. Now, the reason they were both products of the 2011 draft, the reason that Houston was had got the franchise tag and had to get a new deal this year was because he wasn't a first-round pick. The Broncos had the fifth-year option on Von Miller because Von was a first-rounder. They exercised it, and that pushed his free agent eligibility back a year. But you look at Justin Houston and Von Miller to this point, very similar numbers in terms of sack production, pressures. If you go ESPN.com, measure stuffs, even that stat is very comparable between the two players. So certainly now the Broncos have a model that they can work with, start working on a Von Miller contract extension. One of the issues, I think, for the Broncos this year with Demaryius Thomas is they didn't have that template to work off of it. You know, it was who's going to be first? Dez Bryant, Demaryius Thomas went back. You know, that was the chatter all offseason. Ultimately, you know, movement happened with Dez, and then movement happened with Demaryius, and both of them got done on very similar deals. So I think what Justin Houston got may make it easier for the Broncos to get Von Miller done, because now you have a model that you can follow to construct that contract. Maybe it'll be worth a bit more if Miller has a great season. He's 1 year removed from his torn ACL, so he should be back to full health. And maybe, you know, that's a start. That contract for Justin Houston becomes a starting point, and Von Miller gets a bit more. We'll see. But I think the chances of getting Von Miller signed are a bit better now that you've got that model to go off of.
Is that why it was so tough with Dez and Demaryius having their negotiations at the same time?
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to. It's hard to set the market.
You know, no one wanted to set it. It's. You had the feeling that once one got done, the other was going to follow.
Mm-hmm.
Again, very, not quite as similar in production as Justin Houston and Von Miller, but close enough to where you could say these are comparable contracts and they're going to get similar deals. Clearly, it was apparent from John Elway's conference call on Wednesday that Von Miller is the next big priority,
mm-hmm.
that he's a core guy. And just like Demaryius Thomas, irreplaceable.
Von
4-12 to get Von Miller. You're not going to find, and a pass rusher like that comes along at the top of the draft, once every 5 years or so.
And not just as a pass rusher, but he had a pretty outstanding year at, you know, defending the run.
Pro Football Focus had him as the second highest graded run defending linebacker last year behind Khalil Mack.
I mean, when you look at Justin Houston, he had a little bit more production as far as pass rushing, but his run defense was not close to Vaughn's. So Vaughn's multidimensional talent there, you know, maybe makes him a little bit, you know, get a little bit better contract, something like that.
And let's see what happens with Von Miller as well, working in a 3-4 instead of as a 4-3 down lineman in the pass rush, as he was working as a defensive end when the Broncos went into their sub packages. Now he's going to be a 3-4 stand-up linebacker pretty much all the time. Let's see what that does for him. And also let's see what having Shane Ray as an extra pass rusher out there from time to time does for him as well. There's, you know, there's a lot of possibilities for Vaughn.
I mean, it definitely seems like with Shane Ray, he's going to give the Broncos and DeMarcus and Vaughn in particular definitely going to be able to, I think, use them. Maybe not as much, but you can get a lot more effective snaps out of them because he can kind of fill in when he needs to.
That'll help, I think, DeMarcus Ware.
Yeah.
More than Von Miller. I mean, DeMarcus going into his 11th season, he had 8 sacks the first half of last year, 2 sacks the second half. So clearly, I think a priority is going to be keeping DeMarcus Ware fresh. I think we're going to see all three of them from time to time. Gary Kubiak and Wade Phillips have talked about that possibility, but I think we'll see more at Ray relieving both. Probably relieving Ware more than Miller, but certainly giving Vaughn some breathers from time to time. But it's only going to help them, and on the rare occasions you get all three of them out there, it's pick your poison.
Yeah, I mean, I did a piece a while back on looking at when Wade used the three linebackers in Dallas, which was when Ware was in that part of that. And they used it mostly, I think it was in Wade's first year, and they kind of went away from it. First year, it was pretty effective. They didn't use it a whole lot. It's hard to, I'm not really sure what an effective sample size is in the NFL, but the only problem with it was that they had one play where it kind of blew up. They were playing the Panthers, and I think the Panthers, who was their quarterback?
Saturday night game, Matt Moore quarterback.
Matt Moore, yes, Matt Moore quarterbacking, and he gets him for like a 70-something yard pass. Doesn't get to the end zone. They drop him right before. I think they're at the 9-yard line. And they end up, They end up getting maybe 4 yards on their first play, and then they get called for like a roughing the pass or something like that. They have to move back, and they end up like kicking a field goal or missing a field goal or something like that. So, I mean, it could have been worse, but that was a huge outlier that really hurt that statistical number. Other than that, they did pretty good. They allowed fewer yards than their average. Obviously, they used that a lot more on obvious passing downs so they could pressure their quarterback in some rougher situations. So they didn't really attack it with the run, but DeMarcus Ware did say that teams thought, oh, we can take advantage of this. We'll run on them, and they didn't really get much.
Yeah, and the other thing, I mean, Wade Phillips has talked about, like, how he's used players in various defenses, not just in Dallas or in Houston most recently, but also over his career. You know, he's been in New Orleans, he's been in Philadelphia, of course Denver before, and in Buffalo in the mid '90s to the early 2000s. And he talked about how in San Diego, he would get, you know, he would have some formations that got their three outside linebackers onto the field at the same time in 2006. That would have been Sean Merriman, Sean Phillips, former Bronco eventually, and Marcus Harris as well. That was something they used from time to time. But you know, the NFL GSIS analysis of what players were in on which plays only goes back so far. Unfortunately, I don't think it actually goes back to then. Yeah, for they also had Donnie Edwards in there for a while as well. So I think there's going to be plenty of things that Wade Phillips can do. And the thing is, if you're familiar what he's done on defense, he's always been a 3-4 guy. But he's had a lot of different kinds of 3-4 defenses, and he's learned a lot. There's very little that he hasn't done. So his ability to adapt what he's doing to the personnel he has, it's second to none. That's one reason why he's a good fit here, is because he's called virtually every kind of 3-4 defense with every kind of personnel grouping. And, we'll see what he does with this one, which certainly appears to be more blessed with pass rushers than some others he's had over the years.
To kind of cap off this show today, I want to talk about the ESPYs. I didn't watch it much. I watched some of it while I was here at work. Well, I mean, Monte Ball was there, but Peyton was obviously going to be the main attraction, as he was up for the award for best record-setting performance, which, of course, went to his 509. He did win. The talk I saw on my Twitter timeline was about his suit. I don't know if you saw it.
Can't say that I did.
So it was
ESPYs are a little off my radar.
Yeah. It's nice because there's nothing else going on, as is the design of the ESPYs, to go on while no other sports are going.
Slowest sports night of the year. Although I was watching Canada play Trinidad and Tobago in the Gold Cup.
Soccer? That's not a sport.
The real football.
So we got this picture here. It's like a light blue blazer, and I think it's got orange, like a...
He likes to represent the orange. Have you noticed that?
I have.
Like, whenever he goes on some event, there's always some splash of orange there.
Hey.
It's a bold color.
Definitely bold.
And I'll tell you, that jacket, it's pretty close. That jacket's pretty close to the old blue the Broncos had in the 80s and the early 1990s.
The lighter.
It's like a light. It's now his coat, it's a shade or two lighter than that, but certainly you can look at that outfit and flash back to the first Wade Phillips era, or the Dan Reeves era.
Well, I think the only thing that people kind of
it's also a Roy Williams kind of jacket.
Oh,
too.
For sure, that is Roy Williams.
There's a little bit of a test pattern quality to it.
Well, he's wearing a few patterns on there, I think.
Mixing patterns is in right now, though.
I can't do it. Why not? I'm not brave enough sartorially. I'm just not confident I pull it off.
Mix plaids and checks. You know, for ye, you know what? I remember it was, I think it was in 2002. I had on a striped tie, and I had on a checked shirt, and someone said, "Oh, that's a clashing outfit." You know, that's fine. If I can, I want my clothes to wage all out war against each other, not merely a clash.
Well, have you ever seen Frasier?
Yeah, I love that show.
Okay, good. So I've been watching Frasier a lot lately.
Netflix?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
Even though I've seen the entire show, I still find myself going back and rewatching certain episodes on there.
Well, it's great. And one of the things I've been noticing is how busy Martin Crane's attire is, especially when he dresses up and wears a tie or wears a suit.
Because he still wears the flannel shirt.
Yes. Always wears a flannel shirt, and he I can't find anything with him wearing a tie because that's too difficult for Google Images, but yes, always lumberjack style, as is the case in the Northwest.
A very Northwest outfit. Like my father worked a couple of years in the Northwest back in the 80s, and once he got done there, his wardrobe had changed. And actually, my dad to this day still kind of, when it's he lives in Florida now, but when it's a cooler winter day, or if he's up here visiting, he's back in the he's back in Martin Crane mode with the with the flannels and the plaid patterns and all that. I think that, and I have quite a few of those in my wardrobe as well that I bust out in the wintertime. I think it's, and I lived in the Northwest for a time. I think it's something like once you're up there, it sort of rubs off on you, and you know.
Did you know that he is actually born in Britain?
Yeah, he's from Manchester.
I had no clue.
He's from.
Well,
it's interesting because
he has citizenship in America.
Yes.
So I don't think he really has any kind of British accent, but
yeah, he's lost it over the years. He actually, you know, John Mahoney, when the NFL did its 75th anniversary film in 1994, he was the narrator.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It's got a very good, very smooth narration voice. But I always found it interesting that on Frasier, you know, Jane Leaves, who played Daphne, you know, she's from England, but the actress, she's not from Manchester, but she tried to do a Mancunian accent. But John Mahoney was actually from Manchester, home of my beloved Manchester City.
The one thing that stands out to me as far as sports connections to Frasier is the Sonics game, where Niles has the half-court shot.
See, there's two episodes with Niles in the basketball and the Sonics. There's one where he has the half-court shot. Do you remember the other where he ends up giving advice to a player? And what happens?
They needed him as like a psychologist, right?
Yes, like
Sean Kemp.
Yeah, and what happened is the player it was just a generic player.
Yeah, I don't think it was a real player.
He rubs Niles's head, and you know Niles thinks okay, I'm just giving him good advice. You know, good advice. It's helping him, and the player gets front row seats for them to go to the Sonics game, but then he comes to realize that. It's just the player thinks that rubbing Niles' hair is good luck, and that's what he thinks is helping him. You know, the player actually kind of reminded me a bit of Ray Allen, because he was an outside shooter type, and Niles basically has to tell him that this is unhealthy, which means sacrificing courtside seats to the Sonics, which of course sports fan extraordinaire Martin Crane would have adored. That episode, in fact, what I remember about that is when they're sitting in the front row, and Niles can't quite understand, what it all means. And then Daphne's kind of the translator, tells him that the front row seats, oh, it's like first row orchestra.
Oh. Oh.
They're getting set for the tip-off, says Marty. And then he looks at Daphne, and Daphne translates, oh, the conductor just called places.
Oh.
The stage manager call places.
As far as sitcoms go, you can kind of get stuck in too many ruts with jokes, but I really like that kind of recurring how Niles is always kind of, well, I guess Frasier too, but especially
Niles. They're both
Niles.
Utterly they're both the worst athletes.
Well, Niles is especially naive as a kind of upper society.
Frasier is a little bit more worldly, and I think that kind of that plays off his years on Cheers.
Yeah, right.
You know, that's he couldn't have been total. He couldn't have had a complete lack of aware. Like, he didn't have the complete lack of awareness of things like sports that Niles did. Like Niles and Frasier, they're trying to one up each other at one point on gifts, and this is actually a football connection to Frasier.
I was wondering if they ever did anything.
Niles, well, they were trying to one up each other on gifts to give to their father, and Niles comes in and says, "You know what? They didn't have anything on the lower yard line, so I had to settle for something on the 50th."
Oh. Yeah, I can't really. I'm trying to find something. This seems to be fake, says Russell Wilson calls into Frasier.
And there were, and they referenced the Mariners as well, of course, the Major League Baseball team there. When there's a J.D. Salinger like author who's been reclusive and ends up turns out he has a new manuscript. He ends up becoming, sitting in a bar with Marty, and they become friends, and they end up going to the two of them end up going to a baseball game. Meanwhile, the author leaves his satchel with his manuscript in the apartment, and Frasier and Niles read it, this is where Frasier kind of shows a lack of sports knowledge because he doesn't know what a doubleheader is. When Marty and his author friend are going to go watch the Mariners, a doubleheader, they play two games, and then finally, when Niles comes in, Frasier says, "Oh, it's a doubleheader," and then Niles doesn't know either. And Frasier acts like he knows. Oh, they play two games.
Obviously. Well, my mic is having a lot of difficulties. I think we're gonna go ahead and wrap up the podcast.
I could go on this Frasier tangent for hours. I admit, but I really shouldn't.
Well, me and my girlfriend are on season 3, and it kind of trails off towards the end. Like, me and my dad's cutoff was usually just 2000.
Yeah,
2000.
Once they got Daphne and Niles together, the show. I mean, it's a cliche of television.
Oh yeah,
you bring the couple. You turn unrequited love into something that that actually transpires. It's not the same, and that show lost its. It's mojo. I got it back a little bit toward the end, but it wasn't the same as when you had that tension. You get season 4, and there are moments in season 4 and 5 where it really builds up, and I think you'll enjoy those seasons in particular.
Oh, I've seen them already.
Oh, but you're just watching them again.
Okay. It's a wickedly funny show. I have always really loved watching that. Anyway, with that, we'll kind of cut it off here. Everyone enjoy your new Demaryius Thomas contract. And we'll be back next week.
And I think it's, by the way, it's with that contract, I think it's safe to go out and buy a Demaryius Thomas jersey.
What's really cool is that he's going to have a decade in Denver.
If he plays out the contract, yeah, it'll be taking the 2019. And if he plays out the contract and he continues on his current pace, he's going to, I think he's going to be a slam dunk Ring of Famer. And
if not more.
Yeah, it's... Obviously, it's not money, but 10, 20 years from now, if he ends up having a great career the next few years, and he ends up going to the Ring of Fame, being a Broncos legend, that's something that's priceless, and I think it'll be richly deserved if he continues doing what he's doing.
And with that, I kind of want to ask real quick, what do we have coming up next week? The last kind of full week, I think, before. Training camp
last full week before camp arrives. We're going to continue our camp countdown on our position previews. Of course, the rookies report early in the week after, so we're going to look ahead and tell you some of the rookies to watch when you come out here for training camp starting on the 31st. We have our video, the last of our video camp countdowns. They go up next week as well. So just we're getting close. In 2 short weeks, we're going to look out on that hillside and see thousands of fans. And we can't wait to see all of you out here.
White Shark Week, blood in the water.